You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new package of bills in the state capitol aims to prevent housing discrimination and reduce wrongful evictions. A state lawmaker will join us to share the details. First, you might think that the bears in your community are getting ready to hibernate right about now. The weather's getting colder, the days are getting shorter, but bears don't actually hibernate, it turns out. They enter periods of dormancy, but they wake up real easy. Gemma Tarlak is here to educate us about bears and other cool science news. She's a senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, good to talk to you again.
Hello, and happy science to you.
And you too. Well, before we get to those bears, Gemma, we'll tease that for now. Let's start with an even bigger living organism. I guess it's the biggest on the planet, and I never heard of it. Pando.
Yeah.
What is Pando?
Well, you know, if you say the largest known living organism on Earth, I think most people would think the blue whale, for example. But this thing is way bigger than a blue whale. It is 106 acres big. It's an aspen stand in southern Utah named Pando. And it looks, to you or me, just walking through it, like a whole forest of beautiful aspen trees. But it's actually a single root system that may be, we're not sure how old it is, but it may be as old as 13,000 years. And basically, it just kept cloning itself, one sprout after the next. So this enormous 106-acre stand of aspen is a single living organism.
That's kind of mind-blowing, Gemma.
I know. And sadly, though, Pando's not doing so well.
Right. Why researchers are worried about the health of this huge, long-lived aspen organism? What's going on?
Yeah, the whole generational system is out of whack. It's basically, Pando is basically an old folks home right now. There is just not enough new shoots and new aspen in it, and it's because there are too many herbivores. There are too many mule deer, too many elk in particular that love nibbling on Pando, and there are too many of them. There are too few of the herbivores' natural predators, such as wolves and cougars. And because of that, the whole balance is out of whack, and they're just chomping away at Pando.
So a new shoot comes up, and the deer and other herbivores eat it before it gets big enough to establish.
Exactly, exactly.
So are there thoughts on what could be done to save this unique, weird thing?
Yeah, you know, in fact, since 2013, a large portion of Pando has been fenced off, and they're looking at growth inside the fence and also outside the fence that's still unprotected from herbivores. And the stuff inside the fence is doing so much better. It's regenerating. New shoots are growing and maturing. It's incredible how it's something like more than three times the number of new shoots are inside that fenced area.
Well, that'll be an interesting story to keep tabs on. I want to go a little further away now, Gemma. A tale of two dwarf planets. We've got Pluto, no longer a full-on planet, a dwarf planet now, way out there.
And you sound like you're bitter.
No, I'm okay with that. I was okay either way on that one. And here's an argument we were having, what I would call Ceres, a dwarf planet in the asteroid belt. Apparently, it's technically Ceres, the pronunciation. I don't know if I buy that. But anyway, Ceres, another dwarf planet. It's between Mars and Jupiter with the asteroids. And they have something in common apart from their size. What's going on?
Yeah. You know, I'm going to say Ceres. But as we talk, I might change my mind and go to Ceres. So,
I haven't committed.
But, you know, you hear all the time in medicine about these twin studies where two fraternal twins grow up in different environments and develop very differently despite being born at the same time in the same place and sharing so many genes. And astronomers think increasingly that is what's happening with Ceres and Pluto. They think they are actually fraternal twins, that they came into being in the same area of our solar system at about the same time, and then the bigger planets like Jupiter kind of pushed them around, and Ceres moved in closer toward the sun in that nasty asteroid belt, and Pluto, poor Pluto, got pushed way out into the icy wastes of the distant solar system. So it's really interesting because we never thought they were that much alike. And if you look at them superficially, it looks like, oh, they're just two completely different kinds of dwarf planets. But astronomers think more and more they're fraternal twins that just grew up in different neighborhoods.
So do we know where they came from originally? What formed both of them?
Well, there are a couple different theories. And, you know, the beginning of our solar system was just a super chaotic time. There were bits of rock, basically, that would eventually form planets and kind of crunch up together and form a planet. There were asteroids smacking into everything, and there were these other enormous planets, again, like Jupiter. I pick on Jupiter because, you know, it's kind of easy to. But Jupiter just kind of shoving everything around. And they're not really sure yet, because we're not exactly sure that they're fraternal twins, but the signs are increasing that they kind of both formed sort of in the middle of, if you want to think of the radius of our solar system with the sun at the middle and then heading further out, they kind of formed in the middle of the range of our solar system. And then Ceres got pushed in and Pluto got shoved out.
And we didn't used to know much about Pluto, but we had this great flyby that gave us a lot of data. Are we going to be able to do a lot of compare and contrast Ceres, Pluto, and learn a lot more about our solar system?
You know, it was in 2015 that not only did New Horizons fly past Pluto, I think we all remember those incredible images that we saw, but also there's another mission called Dawn that began orbiting Ceres. So basically, we're just now getting this data, and astronomers are just now analyzing it, and it's really the whole fraternal twins idea has really gained speed after looking at the data since 2015. And as more data comes in, I think we're going to have more answers.
Gemma Tarlak is with us from Discover Magazine. We're looking at some of the coolest stories in the world of science. And Gemma, you've had bears on your mind lately and wrote a piece about them. What sparked this piece on bears?
The bears. Well, you know, I love bears, and I think they're really fascinating. I think a lot of times they seem to be one of those animals that just a lot of people think they know a lot about bears, like the whole hibernating thing, right? Bears don't hibernate, as you mentioned. They enter a period of dormancy. It's not a pure, true hibernation. And also, there's no bear on the planet that gets most of its food from honey. They actually, there are a couple different kinds of bears called honey bears, colloquially, but they actually eat the insects more than the honey. So, you know, the whole Winnie the Pooh, total fabrication. Sorry, folks, it's just not true. Bears eat stuff other than honey. And one of the things I find really interesting about bears is, you know, we've heard about polar bears and how they're being affected by climate change, but it's not just polar bears. For example, on Alaska's Kodiak Island, the entire food web, which bears are a huge part of, is being shifted due to climate change.
I think the important question on people's minds is, with a backup quarterback, do the Packers have a chance against the Bears tonight? Oh, wrong Bears. I'm sorry, Gemma. Wrong Bears, wrong magazine, actually. No, but seriously,
that's okay.
You mentioned the hibernation thing earlier, and I don't want to just brush past that, because if there's one fact of nature that we all know, it's that bears hibernate, and you're telling me bears don't hibernate.
No, they are not true hibernators. And when you look at a true hibernator, like, say, a ground squirrel, it lowers its metabolic rate by more than 90% in winter months. Bears do not do that. They might lower their metabolic rate by up to 50%, and they lower their heart rate and their body temperature, but they're typically awake about 15 minutes a day during the winter period. And even when they're not actually awake, they are very easily roused. So, you know, not the ground squirrel. The ground squirrel is kind of out for the count until it wakes up in spring, but bears are easily roused. And it's also really interesting, if you look at a bear in dormancy versus, say, a human on bed rest for the same amount of time, bears in dormancy don't experience severe muscle atrophy or any of the other conditions we might see arise in if you or I were on bed rest for 6 months. And that's because their bodies have evolved these really unique, fascinating adaptations to, for example, reabsorb waste product and recycle it into protein to preserve their lean body mass. You know, bears have it figured out. Evolution has really figured it out for them, and they don't need to hibernate. So why hibernate?
That's pretty impressive, actually, and as tempting as it might be to only get up out of bed in the winter for 15 minutes a day, we have not evolved to do that.
No. Do not try this at home, folks. Get up and keep moving around. Otherwise, you will be very sorry when the days start getting longer.
You write about the size of bears. Bears, big animals, but tell us about the largest bear ever.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. If you can imagine a polar bear, double it. And that is Arctotherium angustidens. This was a short-faced bear. It was huge, you know, kind of on its hind legs standing up. It would have been twice as tall as the average human. And as I said, twice the mass of a polar bear. And it lived in South America a couple million years ago. Sadly, it went the way of other megafauna and is no longer with us. But it's a pretty impressive animal to think about.
And before we wrap up, Gemma, what do you wish you knew about bears that you don't, even after all this research?
There's always more to learn, always.
Gemma, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a good one.
That's Gemma Tarlak, senior editor at Discover Magazine. She's based in Waukesha. She joins us about once a month to share some of the coolest science news.